Pushkin. Mary Gaucher believes that good songs can save lives. She turned to music in her 30s and became a songwriter of incredible depth and honesty, with songs like Mercy Now, A Long Way to Fall, and I Drink, songs that she says helped save her life. A few years ago, Mary started collaborating with U.S. military veterans and their spouses, helping them write songs about their own experiences. Some of those songs are featured on her latest album, Rifles and Rosary Beads. Recently, we sat down with Mary in Nashville, asked her to play a few songs from the album, and talk about this unique collaboration. I'm Bruce Headlam, and this is Broken Record.
You ready for us? All right.
Who's gonna care for the ones who care for the ones who went to war? There's landmines in the living room, eggshells on the floor. I lost myself in the shadow of your honor and your pain. You stare out of the window as our dreams go down the drain. Invisible. War after the war. I get no basic training, I get no purple heart. I am supposed to carry on, I can't fall apart. People look at you and thank you for the sacrifice you made. They look at me and smile, say I'm lucky, you're okay. Invisible, the war after the war. I'm a soldier too, just like you, serving something bigger than myself. I serve unseen, caught in between my pain and the pain of someone else. But I'm stronger than you think I am. I'm right here by your side. I am not your enemy, I don't want to fight. There's no going back in time. I know you're not the same, but you are not the only one for whom the world has changed. Invisible. The war after the war. Invisible.
So tell me a bit about this song.
Yes, thank you. This was written with a group of military spouses from a bunch of different branches of the military, five different spouses, and my fellow songwriter, Beth Nielsen Chapman. And we wrote this at a Songwriting with Soldiers retreat. Songwriting with Soldiers is a nonprofit that pairs civilian songwriters with veterans and military spouses so that we can make songs out of their experiences.
Now, you came to this, you've done this for several years, but you came to this, you don't come from a military background. Your family wasn't in the military, is that right?
Well, my dad served in Korea, but we never, ever heard a word about his service. There was one picture of him in uniform, and he never, ever talked about his service. But he did serve. I have zero experience with the military, and until I started working with Songwriting with Soldiers, I didn't know anyone who'd served in Afghanistan or Iraq.
So take me inside the room when you first started working with veterans and spouses.
I was asked to do it by the founder of Songwriting with Soldiers, Darden Smith, because of a referral through Daryl Scott, a fellow songwriter here in Nashville, who had done a program with them and thought I would be up for the task of doing one of these retreats. So Darden invited me, and the first retreat I did was all women, all female soldiers. I got paired with two women, and we sat down, and I was a nervous wreck because of my limited knowledge of what they'd been through. And so I wanted to get it right, and I wanted to capture what they had to say, but I didn't know what I was doing yet. And so I just kind of interviewed them, and they had a lot to say. And as they spoke, I just typed it into my laptop, and I learned right away that at some point a song title is going to pop out of their mouth, and just put that on the top of the page and start working on it.
Now, you know, military people, and I've done a project with veterans as well and their spouses, and they're the first to tell you that they don't always have access to those emotions and to those feelings. Was there something you had to break through? Were they guarded?
What I remember is that when the music starts to come and it reflects what they're saying, it is kind of a can opener. It just opens the walls of protection that they've built around their heart. Melody is very powerful. And when it reflects you, you feel seen and heard. And that empathy bond breaks down, I think, the natural self-protection that someone has when they've been traumatized. And so many of our veterans do carry war trauma. So I think the answer is yes, a lot of the vets are protected, especially with civilians, because we don't know what they've been through. But also, I think there's a sense that they're being heard when the music starts to come.
So you were first working on the words. You said you were at your laptop. Mm-hmm. You didn't have your guitar.
That's right.
When could you bring the guitar in?
Pretty quickly. I think once I have a couple of lines, then I want to see how they're going to sing. So I'll just start messing around with very simple chord progressions, and it starts to sing pretty quickly. And I've been doing this for 6 years now, so I have quite a bit of experience. But I like to look up when the music starts to come, because almost always their eyes get big, because it's music sees us in ways that there's not really an explanation for. Music goes to the deepest part of who we are, and when the music sees them, they kind of are blown away in a way. Like, it's like, what? Like, this is going to really, truly reflect me. You know, that's what we as songwriters just sort of take for granted. And because this is our job, we know it as part of our everyday life. But for someone who's never experienced an original song of their story, it's quite an astonishing process.
And how do they react after that? Do they feel a little self-conscious again, or do you feel it opens up something that stays open?
I think there's a real sense of intimacy that's formed and empathy in the co-write, in the writing room. But when we take the song back into the large group and they realize, oh my God, what I just revealed is going to be played in front of all these people, I think a lot of fear is experienced. And we talk about it in the retreats. The founder, Darden Smith, always says there's two kinds of courage, at least. There's the kind of courage it takes to put the uniform on and go serve the country, and the kind of courage it takes to take the uniform off and be honest about what happened over there and what remains inside of you that's unresolved. And so this is courage time. When their song is about to be played in front of their group, I think there's a lot of fear. I mean, I've seen guys from Special Forces break into a cold sweat that's running down both sides of their face.
Do you remember playing this song in front of the Warrens after the war? Do you mm-hmm. remember taking this song into a bigger room?
Yes.
Do you remember what the reaction was?
Yes. All of the women who co-wrote it were huddled into a group, and they were holding each other's hands, and there were tears. And there was a sense of sisterhood and understanding and instant bond that a song is capable. It's empathy. They know each other's experience. They've lived each other's lives.
Mm-hmm. And what was the reaction in the audience? What was
the audience was their husbands,
okay.
A lot of them.
Right.
And their husbands, if I remember right, so many of their husbands say the true hero is my wife.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows what she's going through. You know, people thank me for my service, but she's going through the aftermath. And deserves it. I think the husbands were grateful that this song gave voice to their hero. In many instances, it's their wife.
Mm-hmm. Did that surprise any of the men?
I think it was a relief, because this was a co-write with a group of women. So it wasn't any couple singled out. It was five women and five men. And that the group provided cover and relief. Like, oh, we're all going through it. It's not just us.
Mm-hmm.
That's the great power of song in a nutshell. Songs let us know we're not alone, right? That's what I was drawn to all along from the very beginning, listening to the radio as a kid. It's like, oh my God, that's me coming out of that little box on the wall, the intercom, you know?
Do you remember the first song that did that for you, that made you feel that you shared an experience with someone else, someone you didn't know?
Oh God, the radio, when Casey Kasem's American Top 40. I listened to it in my room, laying in my little twin bed under the intercom in Baton Rouge, Louisiana in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And song after song after song. I tried so hard to stay awake for the top 10, song after song after song. Bruce said it the best, Springsteen, I learned more from a 4-minute record than I ever did in school.
Mm-hmm.
Music and songs have always been where I have found my story, myself. My emotional reality is in songs.
What surprised you the most when you started working with the veterans and with their families?
I think what's been most surprising to me is the heaviness of the weight that they carry. Just how hard it is to deal with war trauma inside a family system in a war that goes on and on and on. A lot of these troops are active duty, so they're going to be called back. A lot of the vets we've worked with have multiple deployments. If I'm not mistaken, we're in our 18th year of the conflict in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And it's falling on a very, proportionally to the population, small number of people. They carry so much. And one of the shocking things for me is this could be my kids. I'll be 57 in the next little while. And these could be my babies. It really activated a maternal impulse in me I didn't even know I had. I just want to wrap my arms around them and keep them safe. I found myself in many ways drawn to them in a way that is new for me. Very quickly, deep love. I love these people.
Now, we should say this song, and many of the songs you're going to play today, were from your most recent album, which is Rifles and Rosary Beads, which was, all the songs are co-written with veterans.
Yep, and their spouses.
And their spouses. Mm-hmm. Now, not to scare people away, but I think a lot of these songs, they are incredibly powerful, but, you know, there's some songs that explicitly address the war experience, but there's songs like this one, it's got that great line, and I'm not going to ask you to say which one of the people wrote it, because I'm going to just assume they all did, caught between my pain and the pain of someone else. I think that's something that even people who aren't veterans or in their families, people understand that kind of experience. Were you trying to write songs that could be lifted out of its immediate circumstance and like, this is a song for everybody?
Definitely not.
No?
What I was trying to do is get to their deepest experience. Because of the years I've been doing this, I know for a fact that if I can get to their deepest experience, it will just be a song for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you go past the personal to the deeply, deeply personal, you hit the universal. And the universal is what makes a song great. And what we try to do is write great songs with members of the military and their spouses. The goal is to find what the song wants to say and what their souls need to say.
Well, let's hear a very different song, a great song, which is called Iraq, and it's about a very different experience.
Thank you.
We'll be back with Mary Gaucher's song, Iraq, after this break. We're back with Mary Gaucher performing her song, Iraq, from the album rifles and rosary beads.
I was an army mechanic. I worked with the men. I worked on my back. I tried to fit in. Torque wrenches and ratchets, multimeters and scales, grease on my face, grease on my hands, grease under my nails. And it was so hard to see until it attacked. But my enemy wasn't Iraq. Soldiers bartered and traded. That's the way our world worked. Trading favors for favors in the sand and the dirt. What I wouldn't give them, they try to take. When I refuse, they made me pay. And it was so hard to see until it attacked. My enemy wasn't Iraq. My ground, I didn't give in. I drew a line again and again. When they whistled and whispered, when the wind kicked up dust, I'd look to the sky, ask the Lord why I had no one to trust. And it was so hard to see until it attacked. But my enemy wasn't Iraq. A salute, pat on my back. My enemy wasn't Iraq.
Can you tell me the story of writing this song?
Yeah, I wrote this with a female large engine mechanic who served in the Army. Her name is Brandy Davidson. And she was a vibrant, incredibly charismatic, beautiful woman with a million-dollar smile and beautiful clothes. And she was a class president of her high school class. And she just had personality. And she feels or felt at the time that the sexual harassment she experienced in Iraq broke her down. And she had to rebuild herself after she came home. And it was stunning for me to hear her say that her enemy really wasn't Iraq, that the battle she was fighting and the war that she was engaged in was sexual harassment.
Was that the phrase she used, her enemy wasn't Iraq?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. When you heard that, did you?
I said, sweetie, let's call this thing Iraq. What do you think? And, you know, I tried to imagine what it was like for her. And so I just asked her, you know, were you covered in grease? Give me the names of some of the tools.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what a torque wrench is or any of those things she listed, but she does. And she was one of only two large engine mechanics in the area where she served that were female. And so she was up against it, and it was really hard for her.
Mm-hmm. There's such beautiful lines in that song. The double meaning of I worked on my back, the image of her drawing a line, and of course your mind fills in the rest of it in the sand, in a place where the wind blows the dust. That's quite incredible.
Thank you.
You've written a lot about trauma in your own life.
I have.
And for people who don't know your story, you were adopted. You were in a foundling hospital for a year, back when they called them foundling hospitals.
They sure did, yeah.
You struggled with your adopted family, ran away from home. You did open a restaurant in Boston and stopped drinking alcohol at some point. Does your trauma make it easier to relate to the trauma of someone like this who had a very different experience?
You know, I think so. I think it does. Although all of the songwriters that work with the Songwriting with Soldiers program are really good at what they do.
Mm-hmm.
I feel drawn to it in a way that feels natural to me. Once I got over my original fear around doing a good job and realized I could do this job, I have a real strong belief that it's the songs and songwriting that were my life jackets. After I got clean and sober, I needed something to hold on to. It couldn't be accumulating capital in a restaurant making jambalaya. I needed something more. And so I walked away from the restaurant and became a full-on, full-time songwriter and literally worked my way through my own story in my writing, using the songs to in many ways, release the poison. And what happens is empathy. You know, people say, oh my God, that's my song. You know me. You see me. I'm like, well, you know, we're made of the same stuff. And that is very powerful for both the songwriter and the person who resonates with the song.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you did not take up songwriting because you wanted to be Britney Spears. You did this at age 35. Is that right?
Yeah, I started writing songs in my mid-30s and came to Nashville at age 40.
Do you remember the first song you wrote?
Not really. I think it was probably pretty bad.
Did you play the guitar by then, or did you just start from kind of scratch?
I kind of always had a guitar. My Aunt Jenny gave me her guitar. She was a bit of a folk singer, and she gave me one of her old guitars when I was 13. And then I got my own guitar a few years later from the music store, Roundback Ovation. Mm-hmm. The very first guitar that I ever plugged in and made an acoustic electric guitar. But I didn't write songs until I got clean. So I would play some of my hero songs, you know, the simpler songs. But after I got clean and sober, I was very much called to write. And I couldn't really explain it. I didn't know why, but it became very clear that this is what I had to do.
Mm-hmm.
I never expected to make a career out of it, but that just came on. It was a process.
Mm-hmm.
And it came on, and then I just surrendered to it and came to Nashville when I was 40.
When did you first step on a stage and sing your own songs?
Probably when I was 32, 31.
What was that like?
It's probably the most frightening thing I've ever done. I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified. I remember all the spit drained out of my mouth. It was like I could have spit dust. I had nothing. I had my heart exploding in my ears, no spit. My hands were shaking, and I forgot the words. I forgot the chords. I lost it on stage. It was terrible. But something in me said, well, you're going to have to do that again. You know, I just told myself, yeah, that was horrible. But the good news is it can't be worse than that. Do it again.
had that been, I mean, you know, you were a cook before then. Did you always throw yourself at things you found really hard?
Apparently.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is it getting easier?
It's gotten incredibly for me to be on stage. Yeah. It's where I belong there, and I can take over a stage without terror.
Do you want to play another song?
Happy to do it.
It's the 11th of November, Nashville, Tennessee. Free breakfast at the Waffle House if I show my ID. A parade up on the riverfront, you can hear trumpets play. Hands on heart, the color guard kicks it off on Veterans Day. And they thank me for my service and wave their little flags. They genuflect on Sundays, and yes, they'd send us back. But I believe in God and country, and in the angels up on high, and in heaven shining down on us through bullet holes in the sky. Waitress asked me how I'm doing. I don't know what to say. I was thinking about the battlefield the night I learned to pray. Marchers make their way down Main Street. The crowds begin to cheer. I feel my chest explode as my eyes fill up with tears. And they thank me for my service and wave their little flags. They genuflect on Sundays, and yes, they'd send us back. But I believe in God and country, and in the angels up on high, and in heaven shining down on us through bullet holes in the sky. Jesus said, forgive them, they don't know what they do. He's here with me this morning, and his words still ring true. I hang my head, pray for those we lost and those who remain. As the clouds burst over Nashville, it begins to rain. And they thank me for my service and wave their little flags. They genuflect on Sundays, and yes, they send us back. But I believe in God and country, and in the angels upon high, and in heaven shining down on us through bullet holes in the sky. And in heaven shining down on us through bullet holes in the sky. Oh.
More about the song Bullet Holes in the Sky and Mary's co-writer after this break. We're back with Mary Gauthier.
So tell me about your co-writer.
Sailor in the Navy. His name is Jamie Trent. He served in Desert Storm. He wanted to write a song about how complex Veterans Day is for him, how the feelings that he has on November the 11th are not at all simple. In fact, he feels opposite and conflicting emotions on that day. And I wanted to help him try to get to that. And as we talked, he told me that in his town on Veterans Day, if you have an active duty military ID, Waffle House will give you a free breakfast. And for me as a songwriter, that just, the whole movie's right there.
Mm-hmm.
So let's send you to Waffle House on November 11th, and you tell me what happens. And we wrote the story basically using our imagination and his experience to move the parade past the Waffle House while he's sitting there with conflicted emotions.
How did you get that out of him?
Well, songwriting is a skill, and I've been at it quite a while. And I know that it needs to be a little movie, and the listener needs to be able to see the scenery and put themselves into the protagonist's body and look out from their eyes. So when I ask them questions about what's going on in the little movie and they give me great answers, it's really exciting for me to ask Jamie, what about when people thank you for your service? And he's like, I just don't know about that. And what I got from him is that a lot of the folk who thank him for his service don't understand what his service is and continues to be. He's struggling. I got a text from him yesterday. He's been out of the military for quite some time, and he's in hospital today, struggling with a heart condition that was brought on direct result of his service. He calls it the gift that keeps on giving.
Mm-hmm.
He's dealing with probably a lifetime of health issues from what happened to him on the aircraft carrier that he worked on. So the movies come alive with detail. The songs are little movies, and the vets just give me the detail if I ask them the right questions.
Is that the same process you put yourself through?
Absolutely.
You ask yourself those questions?
Yep.
Do you see the movie first, or do you have to build the movie?
I build the movie. I never know how it's going to end. In this song, when the last line became clear that it was going to rain, we both screamed. It's so perfect. It's so perfect. We didn't know it was going to rain. It was coming along, and it was just, we both went, as it begins to rain, and we just scream because it's just like, and then the curtain closes. The songs have their own intelligence. And in many ways, we're just trying to get David out of the marble, like mm-hmm. Michelangelo said. But in other ways, I kind of know, I got the chisel and the hammer. I kind of know where to bang.
Okay. I'm going to try and steal some more of your tricks for our listeners. Pretend I'm sitting here. I'm not a veteran. I've got a guitar in my hand. I wish it were as nice as your 1950 Gibson, which is really beautiful. I know three or four chords, like most people do. Where do I start?
Well, you ask yourself, what matters to me today? What's important to me today? What's going on inside me today? What are my concerns, areas of concern? I teach songwriting a lot, and my hope for each student is that they write the songs only they can write. You know, everybody wants to be their hero or sound like Bob Dylan, but Bob's got that covered. And I think that we each have songs only we can write. And so my guidance would be to address your areas of concern, deep concern. What really matters to you today? What's really bugging you today? What's bringing great joy today? I don't know if you're going to write a happy song or a sad song. I don't know your mood yet, but be honest about it in your song and just come up with three chords that sound like that feeling and let it start to be guided with an invisible hand that I don't have a name for. It exists for all of us. If we ask it to help us, it will.
Does every one of your songs have, in the writing, have that kind of eureka moment, like when you realized that it was going to rain at the end of his song?
No, not all of them, but I think the good ones all do, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The good ones all contain what I call a God line, a line that is so good I couldn't have possibly written it, that it came through me more than from me. And I look at the page and go, oh my God, look at that.
Are you one of, because your songs seem so focused and so concentrated. I think most people who listen to you imagine that you just write these songs and they're these little jewels and you uncover them. Are you that kind of writer, or are you a kind of let a thousand flowers bloom? You write a lot of songs and then whittle them down.
I whittle. I'm
you
a hard
whittle?
Worker. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The simplicity is because I've edited it and edited it and edited it.
Even in individual songs,
mm-hmm.
how many verses would you write?
Well, I write more verses than you hear, but each line, I could easily spend a whole day, 8 hours on a line.
Your writing often reminds me of Leonard Cohen's.
Leonard's one of my heroes.
Who wrote pages and pages of lyrics to get it down to that very, and you have the same quality of being able to take something very large and amorphous, a feeling, and put it in very concrete language.
Yeah, it starts amorphous for me too.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very large and amorphous. And the process of getting it too simple is quite complex, actually.
Mm-hmm.
there's just a feeling in my gut that says you're not there yet, and I honor it. And it makes me work harder, and I don't let myself off the hook very easily. I just keep going and try to get to that truth that I know is underneath all of the almost truths.
Do you write every day?
No. I have zero discipline around writing.
Okay. What makes you sit down and write then?
Well, with the vets, it's urgent. I'm sat down in front of them, and I got to get them a song, and I got 2 hours. All these songs were written in less than 2 hours. So I don't do the hardcore whittly thing with these as I would with my own.
Mm-hmm.
So that's urgent. I got to do it. What gets me to write a song these days are intense emotions,
mm-hmm,
and confusion. Co-writes help. I mean, I live in Nashville. It's a co-writey town. And we sit down with a co-writer and have some coffee and talk about life, and that'll get me to a song.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not a... I wish I was more disciplined around that. I wish, mm-hmm, I produced more songs.
I want to ask you about something you said a couple of years ago when you released an album. You said you were at a point in your life that you wanted to de-romanticize romantic love.
Yeah.
That you were through with the idea of romantic love.
I was through with the idea that romantic love was going to save me.
Hmm.
There's a difference.
Okay.
For the longest time, I thought romantic love would fix me. Kind of like the way I thought booze and dope were going to make me less anxious.
Mm-hmm.
I thought romantic love was going to make problems go away. I think the move towards de-romanticizing romantic love is a move towards adulthood in some ways.
Hmm.
I believe in romance. I believe in romantic love. I'm currently in love, in fact, but it ain't going to fix me. The problems that I take into romantic love will remain the problems that I have to deal with.
What did you think romantic love was going to fix when you believed that romantic love could fix you?
Oh, God, you know, that's a hard question. You're going Barbara Walters on me here.
I'm going to ask you what kind of tree you would be next.
Yeah. So. I think for the most part of my life, I've been incredibly lonely. Music has helped ease that loneliness by connecting me to people. And the process of working in therapy on a lot of the stuff that happened when I was a baby,
mm-hmm,
that year in the orphanage has a greater impact than, if you'd have told me the impact of that when I was 20, I mean, it would have just destroyed me, because I wouldn't expect at 50 going on 7 that I'd still be dealing. I'm going to be dealing with that for the rest of my life. We think of as an infant as they don't remember it. So it really isn't going to have an impact. Turns out it affects the brain chemistry, and it leaves a traumatic imprint on the brain to not be held as a baby. And there was something about romantic love that I thought would replace the affection I didn't get as a baby. And I had to come to terms with it. The reality is I have to learn how to deal with that in a way that it isn't going to make someone else my savior.
So you still believe in romantic love?
Absolutely.
You're putting it in its place. What comes along after? What sustains people? And I'm thinking particularly of a lot of the people you were working with on this most recent album. What sustains them then? It's not romantic love.
Woody Guthrie said, all we really are is hoping machines. And so you have to have hope. And there are many, many, many forms of love. Romantic love's only one. We kind of idealize that, I think, culturally. Certainly songs have idealized that. But
mm-hmm,
if you were to ask me how the veterans in that position of de-romanticizing romantic love are able to keep it going, I think it's their love of each other. It is love, but it's the love, it's family love. It's family of choice. It's hope.
Mm-hmm.
And again, back to the power of grace.
Can you finish by doing Mercy Now?
Be my pleasure.
Well, my father sure could use a little mercy now. The fruits of his labor falling right slowly on the ground. His work is almost over, won't be long, he won't be around. I love my father, he could use some mercy now. And my brother could use a little mercy now. He's a stranger to freedom, shackled to his fear and doubt. The pain that he lives in, it's almost more than living will allow. I love my brother, he could use some mercy now. My church and my country, they could use a little mercy now. As they sink into a poison pit, it's gonna take forever to climb out. They carry the weight of the faithful who follow them down. I love my church and country, they could use some mercy now. Every living thing could use a little mercy now. Only the hand of grace can end the race towards another mushroom cloud. There's people in power who'll do anything to keep their crown. I love life, life itself could use some mercy now. We could use a little mercy now. I know we don't deserve it, but we need it anyhow. We hang in the balance, dangle between hell and hallowed ground. Every single one of us could use some mercy now. Yes, every single one of us could use some mercy now. Thank you.
love Jamie's playing on that. I love that one little dissonant note. I thought, is that a mistake? But then she pulled it off.
To learn more about Mary Gauthier, go to marygauthier.com. To hear other Broken Record episodes and also a playlist of Mary Gauthier songs, head to brokenrecordpodcast.com. Broken Record is produced by Justin Richmond and Jason Gambrell, with help from Mia LaBelle, Jacob Smith, Julia Barton, and Jacob Weisberg. Our Broken Record theme music is by the great Kenny Beats. This show is brought to you by Pushkin Industries. For my co-hosts, Malcolm Gladwell and Rick Rubin, I'm Bruce Headlam.